PacificPelican.us/64. Welcome to podcast number 107. In this episode, I'm going to take another look at my novel and the process of publishing it on the Kindle store and on the iBook store. And I'm going to consider and ruminate on some notes I've written down, both from feedback from a few people that read it and that I talked to, and a few things that I thought about myself. Today is October 9th, 2013. You can find the show notes. Go to PacificPelican.us/64. So the name of the novel is Crossing the Continental Divide by me, Daniel J. McKeown. I previously discussed the novel in podcast number 60. So if you want to hear the previous episode about it, you can go to djmcloud.com/podcast, listen to that. That one was more focused on characters and plot and giving some background about the writing process. Now, in this episode, I do have some further out, more macro kind of thoughts about the book. And so, before I get into some of those questions, I was going to talk about putting it on Kindle. Now, Kindle is obviously a very popular ebook platform. I think it's the most popular in the U.S. right now, and I know that Amazon has different levels of uptake in different parts of the world, and the Kindle store and stuff included. But for a place to publish your books, it's a pretty major option. So that's where I went with first. I actually went and published it in May of this year. Now, Amazon has a pretty straightforward process for publishing Kindle books. The books can be in a number of different formats. The format that they, I guess you could say that they're encouraging right now is Kindle Format 8, KF8, and that allows a lot of different kinds of HTML and rich data to be put into the book. However, they also accept EPUBs if they're properly formatted, I guess. You can submit your EPUB, and what I used to make my EPUB was Pages. So I actually used Pages to just create, take the text document. I had composed the novel in BB Edit. So it was as a long text document. So I put it into Pages by Apple, which is a Mac program. And that version allows export as EPUB. So I just took the text, I put a first page in for a cover, and I put a EPUB file up on Amazon. I uploaded it to Amazon server. And after taking a look at it for, I want to say, a few days, Amazon approved it, and the book is now available on the Amazon store. So if you search Crossing the Continental Divide on Amazon, you should be able to see the Kindle edition, which is the version available. And then in July, I put out the iBooks version. Those are the two that I have now. So with Apple, they also accepted an EPUB. As far as I know, they may have accepted other formats as well. What I'm pretty sure of is the more rich type of data, the more complex type of data being represented, whether you're talking about something as simple as tables or as complex as specially formatted photo or video or interactive features, any of that kind of thing is going to be more difficult to get to work in both iBooks and in Kindle. But for mostly text, which it's a novel, it's text, it's pretty straightforward to be able to get an EPUB for each of those major vendors and upload it to your account. So with Amazon, you have to get a Kindle Direct Publisher account, which you can use an Amazon account that you already have, and go to the kdp.amazon.com section. If you go there, basically they give you the information you need to publish the book. And it's pretty straightforward, and at that point then you get you choose the different program you're in, but you know, you at that point Amazon gets a cut, and you get a cut when sales go through once the sales hit a certain amount. Now with iTunes, you use an iTunes Connect account to do a very similar thing. When you're talking about iBooks, you take an iTunes account. That you can't have the same account that you use as a developer for apps, but if you have, you can always just create another account. So you take an iTunes account and you go to the iTunes Connect website, and that's where you give the information and submit the data. Now, in the process, you know, they ask you what publisher. Well, I basically, started my own small publishing house. So it's PacificPelican.us Independent Press. So, you know, that's my label. And it actually has gotten me interested in the idea of talking to other people, you know, some of the smart, interesting people I know, and approaching them about writing a book. Although, you know, and this also comes down, you know, into the discussion about my novel. There's a difference between something that is a well-written work and something that is in the sights of the market at the moment. Those aren't always the same thing. There can be some crossover. The readers that are out there, the people that are reading a lot of ebooks, it seems like a lot of them are into very specific genres, and they look for the type of books that they like. So then people are going to write in genres, and so, you know, you get genre mashups and stuff, but I think instead of just being looked at in a qualitative way, there's a lot of judgment about whether a book fits into a genre. So there's discussion about what is a book about someone who's a young adult facing adventures or defining experiences or whatever. And the the YA, the so-called YA, the young adult fiction section, is all high school kids. So apparently, you see people on Goodreads or on their writing blogs talk about how they read YA all the time. You really spend your time reading about high school kids? Like, I can't imagine, like, stories about high school kids, even if there's vampires or whatever, or maybe especially if there's vampires. I just don't see why anyone would care, especially that wasn't in or around high school age. Whatever, I mean, absolutely, people have the freedom to read what they want, and they should. So, a book that, you know, you find, you convince someone you know to write could still be something that may not sell very well. So, I kind of see though publishing as something, you know, like long form publishing, as something of value, and that different voices are very valuable. So I could see if I could gather up the money to buy a book, commission a book from some people that I know, I would. And then even if I took a loss on it as a publisher, as long as I would be able to get by, and as long as I could convince my wife of this plan. So, I don't know. But the question of length is one that actually... I feel like could conceivably come up with my book. My book is fairly short. It has over 25,000 words, but it isn't very long. Now, it's a story that I think of as a novel, and I think it's actually of fairly similar length to some great classics like Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad or The Stranger by Albert Camus. And beyond that, I think that modern audiences are pressed for time, and they're pressed for attention. They're for you know, it's a difficult thing to get, you know, to get someone to read a whole book. So I think a modest length that still expresses long form thought is fine today in today's market, not just for books, but today's market for attention, today's market for you know, specific book reading time. It can be a very rewarding activity, but people will put it off because they may be distracted, or people will listen to books. And, you know, I thought about that, and I don't think I would want to be the person to read my own book in an audiobook. Now, I could see giving someone else permission to do it. Maybe, you know, I don't know that, you know, I don't know that there's, it's not really an issue. I think, like, you know, it's the big titles that obviously need the audiobooks, because there's a lot of different listeners. But, you know, I think you'd have to find a person that had the voice of your book, even if it's your voice as a writer. They'd have to have the right, you know, acoustic voice to express it. Now, I didn't yet release the book for Kobo, Nook, Google Books, any of those other ones, and there's no sense that those are not popular with some readers, and you know, for some titles it may make sense to just go on every bookstore. But I think for, you know, I have that on the two biggest ones right now. So yeah, if you feel like checking the book out, like I said, it's on Amazon. Then you can also search for the book on iBooks. And after this break, I have a couple more things to talk about. Thank you. this book was an attempted fusion of the broad continental sweep of Victor Hugo with the blinding American speed of Hunter S. Thompson. A combination of stuff I'd experienced, stuff I'd seen, stories I'd heard, stories I'd read, and stuff I made up. Well, not only am I a very big fan of those authors, but I had characters that were nods to both their work. Victor Hugo, I named one of the French performers that was there with Ergeterix in Detroit in the book. One of them is named Gilliatt, and that is a nod to The Toilers of the Sea, a great novel by Victor Hugo. And the other musician is it was named Droit, and that just means right. But you know, I mean, it's a French word, and you know, like I mean, French techno is pretty cool. It has had some you know, some great DJs come from there. So then you also on the Hunter S. Thompson side, on his novel The Rum Diary, he has I guess kind of a protagonist named Paul Kemp, I think I would say, but then there's another key character, and that guy is named Yeeman. Now, I basically just lifted that name, but the name is a little different. The way I spell it in the book is the way that it was spelled by one of the founders of Ireland, Eamon de Valera. And the main character, Yoss, or as Eamon calls him at one point, Yossarian, is obviously a reference to Catch 22 by Joseph Heller, one of the greatest things ever written in English. Well, you know, after writing the book, you know, during the editing process between last November and last May, and then, you know, even a little bit after that, when, you know, when my brain keeps working on kind of editing and thinking about it, I look back, parts of the book. I'll look up words. Like, I there's a scene where Yoss spills a bunch of coffee, and I talk about the tar, like, drac, whatever, that the church basement coffee is, you know, what is, it's not, you know, I'm talking about that specific coffee, and I'm like, well, what about, like, really enjoying good coffee? Do I put that in there, too? It doesn't really matter, but I wonder that, and then, you know, I actually do talk about enjoying a light roast and stuff, you know, when, you know, there's another point in the novel. So, yeah, you know, like, I don't know. There's all sorts of different stuff that, you know, can be looked up in terms of, you know, how is that section written out? I had a plot, you know, I had the story more or less outlined. So then when I actually wrote the book, I wrote in the scenes that I was planning to write and connected them with some other stuff, with a lot of, you know, scene and description. And I was writing with the idea of bringing the book to, you know, to a point, you know, at the end where they were crossing the continental divide, as the name suggests. And well, Yoss is the protagonist. But of course, he is doing that as he's traveling with Brenda. And one of the issues that I wondered about that comes up with writing, and especially men writing, is how are women depicted? How are women described? What are the things that women say? What, you know, there are critiques that, you know, do women, you know, and do women characters only talk about men, or, you know, do they only do, you know, actions that are propagated or forced by male protagonists, male action stars. There's so many critiques, and like what I would call the Tumblr feminists have terms like manic pixie dream girl, and that's a description of a woman that comes into someone's life that is quirky and helps inspire him, usually, you know, always, almost always him, to do something cool. I don't know. That's probably not it. I probably got it completely wrong. And there's definitely stuff on the internet about it, and you know, people that have developed the idea. And I think that it's always valid to look at the different critiques that are out there of writing. But I would say Liska, the first woman that Yoss sort of dates in the book, he you know, the woman that he sees at, after well, you know, he meets her at the concert in Detroit. I wouldn't say she's a manic pixie dream girl. I would say that Yoss thinks that she's you know, very cool, but on the terms that she's a person that's cool. It's not really doing having an effect on his course of action, except maybe his romantic interest in her. I don't know. I think that's a distinction. So, but let me read a section where he's thinking about that stuff. This is from chapter 8 of Crossing the Continental Divide. The strange sand caves jutting out into Lake Superior, I mean Lake Erie, have a strange backcountry, a sandy pit of mystery in the middle of the island that must be the province of bold dirt bikers and adventurous SUV drivers. Yoss knew he didn't have the car for doing stuff like that. Didn't want one. But he cruised on the circular road on the island until a few hits on his cannabis bowl and a few tasty sips of light roasted coffee and that Ohio sun coming through his sunroof. No way. No, this way a day to stop by that park with a lighthouse and a view of Cedar Point, where you sort of have to park in that lot of that Methodist church, or is it Lutheran? Remember how much Tom Wolfe made of John Glenn's Lutheranness and the right stuff? Anyway, Yoss stopped and walked near the water, and nothing was even trying to convince him this hadn't been a great weekend. Liska had given him her number and an alluring kiss goodbye, but a woman that transcendent was too perfectly adorable to be corralled effectively quickly, corralled in a loving way. Yoss loved how beautiful she looked, how smart she seemed to be, her uncomplicated idealism. A woman driven to such heights of wonderfulness did not usually come out of an ideal background and could be lost back again to that wilderness. So that's the end of the passage. Well, you know, I don't know. I think that the fact that there's a coincidence later where Liska actually doesn't meet up with Yoss because she's in town to meet with other women in Cleveland, and you know, it's like a group of women that she met online, and she's, you know, going to a noodle house with them. I guess as a male writer, I do have a hard time writing female dialogue and writing female characters that I find believable. It's something I'm working on. And I mean, this was my first novel, and so I hope to be able to write credible, quality female characters. But give the female characters credit for doing their own thing. But at the same time, the book is mostly from the perspective of one male, and then you know, like his friend, and then, you know, I guess to the lesser extent, other people. Are there too many typos in the book? Well, I think there may be a few too many of-if mix-ups, stuff like that. But much of the book uses run-on sentences, made-up names, odd spellings, etc. Intentionally, following thought rather than form. Is the book kind of alarmist? Am I alarmist about the Midwest? You know, that's a fascinating question. I don't know. I love the region, but it is so crazy. the book fit into the new adult genre? No, probably not. You can find the show notes at pacificpelican.us/64. You can find me for the book at djmcloud.com/book. And this has been podcast number 107 with me, Dan McKeown, recorded October 9th, 2013. And it's been the part two podcast about the book Crossing the Continental Divide.